Every year, 1.2 million children are sold into slavery across the globe. Your favorite webcomic creators have joined forces as the Comic Creators for Freedom, fighting together to end human trafficking with over 100 artists create one image in the hopes of spreading awareness and raising money to help fight this heinous crime. For information on how you can participate or also contribute to the annual fundraising drive, which begins this year on January 9th through the 20th, visit www.comiccreatorsforfreedom.com and learn more.
News and commentary on the Webcomic Beacon newscast.
It's Sunday, January 15th, 2012, and this is episode 50 of the Webcomic Beacon newscast with Eric Kimball from BladeBunny.com.
Greetings and salutations, Internet.
From alexsguide.net, Alex Heberling.
Hello, hello.
And the owner of Moonbase Press, who publishes such titles as Bill Holbrook's Kevin and Kel and Mark Buford's Scary Gary, webmaster of the Bill Holbrook Store, as well as the writer, artist, and creator of the Accidental Centaurs, National Cartoonist Society member, and winner of the longest introduction here at the Webcomic Beacon newscast, John Lotshaw.
I should say thank you. Thank you.
And to round it off, I'm Thomas Rebor from 910 Comics at 910cmx.com. And before we start off today, let me go ahead and congratulate John, because today is the 10th anniversary of his webcomic Accidental Centaurs over at accidentalcentaurs.com.
Yeah, I can't believe it's been 10 years. It's a long, strange trip that it has been, definitely.
Yeah, we never thought you'd definitely make it past 2 months.
Neither did I. And actually, the original plan was that I wouldn't have made it past 2. It's kind of... the happy anniversary.
Yep. And if we take out all the hiatuses that you've gone on, John, I think you've got maybe 6 months of the comic.
oh, come on. 7. Who's counting, right?
Podcast became mean today really quick.
Jerry.
But
let's go, John, why have you not stopped molesting young children? I have to know that.
Well,
why do you hate America?
The children are one thing. I want to know about the stuffed animals.
What is this, MSNBC? Jeez. All right.
No, it's Maury.
But let's go ahead and start off. Our top story today is that ICANN, the people who are in charge of all the URLs on the internet, has unleashed the mother of all domain name land grabs. For just the small price of $180,000, you will actually be able to set up your own .whatever. Just as you have .coms, .biz, .org, .info, .jobs, .mobi, .tr, .tae, whatever, they're actually going to be setting up to where you can make your own domain now. And this has caused a lot of controversy, because anyone can apply for this. If they are able to pay the $180,000 per domain, and they really don't have any way of protecting copyrighted names or even trademark names. So if someone gets in there before the company, you can have .Coca-Cola, .DC Comics, .Marvel Comics, .whatever.
Well, there are ways to protect legal trademarks. These companies can go in and protest each individual one. That was the main concern brought up about this, that, people would be grabbing domain names for all these other companies. And there may be some of that, but I think the bigger problem, the thing that's not really thought about, is grabbing stuff like .comic. Who's going to get .comic? Who's going to control the comic domain? Who's going to control .movie? Who's going to control, whatever, all of these sort of generic names that aren't company names but have associations?
Alex, what do you think?
Oh, this is like so far over my head that I'm like, let the big giants fight. Let the titans go at each other and just fight it out, because I'm never going to be able to afford something like this myself, so.
Oh, I thought you already had about four of them lined up.
.x, oh yeah.
I mean, it wasn't that long ago that they opened up the .xxx domains, and that caused its own little bit of controversy there.
Well, if you've ever seen the marketing, have you seen the marketing for .xxx?
I haven't seen anything for .xxx, to be honest. I don't go into that type of stuff. What about you, Eric? Mm-hmm.
You've seen my comic, Tom. The .xxx advertising literally advertised that it's a good thing for companies to buy these domains to protect their domain names. I mean, it was part of their marketing. And that's sort of the concern, that it will be marketed to companies simply to try to blackmail them.
And that's a good thing. A good thing to think about, because I do see people. It wasn't that long ago that they had a lot of cyber squatters going out and snatching up .com names to try to get a bunch of money out of the companies.
Well, it still happens. You know, somebody lets a domain name expire, and all of a sudden the vultures pounce upon the carcass. Snap it up, and then you realize, oh, I should have let that expire. I should renew it. No, sorry, it's gone, because you weren't in the queue to be automatically renewed. And so now some squatter has got a temporary page up where yours used to be.
And yet, I mean, we've also seen the other aspect of it. I mean, I always remember the story of the young British programmer who had a domain set up with his name. His name was Michael Rowe.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, he was actually sued because he had set up Mike Rowe Software. .com.
Yeah.
Oh, he received a lot of money and an Xbox 360 for that from Microsoft after they realized, boy, this lawsuit is stupid.
Yeah, boy, that guy's got a dirty job. But anyway, yes, well, let's just let that joke die. but it does bring up the question of who's going to control the a more generic domain rather than something like a .coca-cola or something like that, but something like .comics, who's going to control that? And is this going to become any kind of valuable namespace? The other top level domains that have opened up, dot travel, dot arrow, dot museum. Who uses those? Does anybody use those?
Exactly. Goes to the .com.
Everybody goes to the .coms. That's still the prime real estate on the internet, is the .com, and to some extent the .net and .org. Especially when you've got people from other countries, because those domains are supposed to be for the United States only. You got people from all over the world who want the .com address. Nobody wants their own country's specific one. Who's going to want these? Is there anybody who really does want them?
Well, yeah, that is the question. I mean, now, the reason this was brought up, the reason this initially came about was ICANN was trying to respond to to the international community. The international community has been complaining that .com is U.S. only, and they want their own.
They've got their own. You know, you've got bbc.co.uk. You've got .ca for Canada. You've got...
But they don't have .com. I mean, they don't have .com net, and they want their own .com .net.
The top level domain though is the .uk, but there is a .. for example, under the UK, there is a .co, which is for commercial. There is a .. there is one for educational. There is one. I think it's .ac for academic. There are in there, but again, everybody wants the prime real estate is .com, and it doesn't matter. And you know, the international community are the ones that are up in arms, but it's people who are setting up the businesses. They're the ones who are having. They're not the international community, quote unquote, is not who's buying these URLs, these domains. It's the business people in those countries, and they want the dot coms. They don't because they realize that this is a global business and not a country specific one. They don't want to limit themselves to just Canada or just the UK. They want to be worldwide, so they want an identity that's worldwide. They don't care about and that's what the dot com has evolved into.
Right.
I think this is a tempest in a teapot. Because ICANN has made this land grab, but it's a land grab in a swamp. Nobody's going to build in these things.
Well,
it's going to be limited. There is going to be an initial grab at some of the stuff. I can see some of the people. I mean, how long until we see a dot Paris Hilton or a dot Lindsay Lohan from somebody who has absolutely no connection? Because it is going to be.
But it's only going to be viable for as long as it gets buzz on E.
Exactly. It's going to be the chromium covers.
Somebody's wasted $180,000.
The logic is the nations are saying, if we open this up, one of our businesses could grab, let's say, Dot World. And let's say Dot World through clever development becomes as popular as .com, then we control it, not the U.S. It's the idea of creating a new level top domain name that through proper management could become as popular as .com.
It could. Now, I'm not saying that this hasn't happened. This has happened. If you look at .tv, .tv has become, which is Tuvalu, a little tiny atoll in the middle of the Pacific. This is one
a little tiny what?
Atoll.
What did you call me? Talk about getting mean.
I keep hearing this interference on the line here. It's kind of something wrong with the signal.
But yeah, I mean, the domain such as .tv, that's basically become that country's main source of income.
It is. But .tv has a special value. I wouldn't want AccidentalCentaurs.tv unless Accidental Centaurs was a TV show. And so there's a very niche, there's a real niche for that. There's another one for the Federation of Micronesia, which is .fm, and radio stations have been latching onto that one. And then of course there's .ly, which believe it or not is Libya. But I think
that this is going to be. I mean, it's going to have a. It's going to be start off big, and it's going to die off very quickly. The cost of it is going to be rather prohibitive, and I just don't see everybody and their grandmother going out and getting one because of the cost and because, as stated, it is good, the .coms are still the most important thing.
But I can guarantee you, someone's going to grab .comic.
Oh, probably.
There is going to be a .comic we're going to see from Marvel, DC, or one of the major publishers grab .comic.
Well, I mean, I expect to see someone grab .webcomic as well. But speaking of webcomics, let's go ahead and go on to the next story, and that is we are seeing that the National Cartoonist Society, which John here is a member of, is actually having their annual awards, and they are opening a category up for webcomics. Now, one of the requirements for it, they've changed. It originally said that the creator must earn the greater part of their living directly from the strip or property. I know they've amended that to state that it's now must earn their greater part of the living directly from cartooning in order to adhere to the NCS criteria that creators under consideration must either be full members or eligible for full membership, which basically means it's rather than specifying it, somebody who does one strip isn't going to be earning that much, but somebody who does five strips the old way isn't going to be getting that one. It opens it up and expands out the categorization for who can enter. Now, John, I know that you're not, you're not the official representative for the NCS, but you are a member.
I'm not.
And I know you've been talking to the president of the NCS.
And in fact, right now I'm getting my materials about this from the NCS so that I can have them in front of me. The official on NCS letterhead paperwork about this. So, but yeah, this was announced back in November at our get-together in Savannah. The Southeast chapter had a get-together with all of the a lot of the alumni from Mad Magazine. And Tom Richmond, who is president of the NCS, the illustrator who does a lot of the movie parodies for Mad Magazine, he's the president, he announced this. So I'm going to go ahead. I'm just going to read here real quick the requirements for the webcomic, because there are some. One, it has to be comic strip format only, so no single panels and no long-form narratives.
That basically means the usual three-panel type thing, such as Safe Havens from Bill Holbrook or Schultz's Peanuts. I mean,
right. But now this is for the online award. This is not for the other comic strip award. This is specifically for the online.
Yeah, as Tom said on his blog, this is just a baby step.
So for example, Accidental Centaurs would not be eligible because it is a long form narrative. Must be published in English or pantomime. Must be web only publication, and any syndication in print would make it eligible for the newspaper comic division. If you're only published in one paper, that's not syndication, so that leaves you in there. It must be a weekly. This is one of the big sticking points, is that there are so many different schedules for webcomics, from intermittent to dailies. And so there has to be a line drawn somewhere. And the other thing was, you must have shown a consistent publication based on a determined time schedule, meaning you're going to be twice a week, you're going to be daily or weekly, and you stick to that as close as you can. They understand that, and they're making allowances here for, you know, people not being able to make it over the course of the calendar year 2011.
Now, to go back to one, you said it must be a weekly. I'm assuming that's a minimum. It must be at least weekly, not just...
Yes.
Sorry, it must at least be a weekly, yes. So once every other week would not be eligible. And then the creator must earn the greater part of their living directly from the strip property in order to adhere to the NCS criteria that creators under consideration must be either full members or eligible for full membership. Now, that kind of contradicts itself because the NCS criteria is not that you make your living direct or the greater part of your living from any one property. It's from all cartooning related activities. So, again, I think they're going more with the NCS definition rather than the slightly incorrect wording here, as you mentioned earlier, Tom.
Correct.
So it's and there has been some controversy over this in terms of why are you having a separate category to begin with? And really the answer is because it's their awards and they can do whatever they want. the NCS, I'm very honored to be a member of the NCS and surprised, but also very honored. And NCS is it's an organization that's very rooted in a specific way of doing work, and the very fact that they're even considering this is a huge, huge step for them to take. Last year, and I have to give credit where credit is due to three people for this. They had an introduction to webcomics. And on the panel, they had Dave Kellett of Sheldon, Randall Monroe of XKCD, and Kate Beaton of Hark of Ava. And
I know Eric's loving to hear that.
No, I like Kate. I really do. And she should have been on that panel. So I have no problem with that.
And it was very successful. into introducing webcomic and webcomic artists to the NCS. The big problem that the people in the NCS, more traditional cartoonists have had, has nothing to do with the fact that we're on the web. It has to do with revenue models. And some people have interpreted the way that webcomics work as a threat to their work, because for 100 years, this whole system has worked by cartoonists selling the artwork to the syndicate. In essence, is what they're doing. And with webcomics, you don't make any money off the art. The art is a loss leader. The strip itself is a loss leader to bring people in to build a community, and then the community gets monetized. And that is an anathema to a lot of these people, because they're seeing people give away what they've worked all their careers to be in a position to sell. And it's harder to become a syndicated cartoonist than it is a lot of other many others, because there's so few slots.
And yet I actually find that ironic, because and Charles Schulz didn't become wealthy from doing Peanuts, and Jim Davis didn't become wealthy from drawing Garfield, but rather it was the merchandising that made them millionaires.
Those are the exceptions to the rule. Most cartoonists, most comic strips are in 50 to 100 papers. And they don't have a publishing deal. They don't have television specials. They don't have plush dolls of their characters on suckers, suction cups hanging off the insides of people's car windows. They don't have all of those merchandising things that those other properties have. So all they have is the artwork itself.
But it does seem a lot like it's more syndicate versus independent.
Well, there was another line in this announcement I found very interesting. When they were announcing this, they said, "The crux is separating those who are doing professional work from those who are just enthusiastic hobbyists." And it really seems that a lot of the restrictions and a lot of the holding back on the web is to avoid the horror, the absolute terror of giving hobbyists any sort of respect.
Okay.
You know, the National Cartoonist Society could mistakenly give an award to a hobbyist is just absolutely horrible.
Let me respond to that. The NCS is a professional organization.
Yes.
And therefore, it is an organization for professionals. It is intended as something that the talented hobbyist should aspire one day to being able to join. It is elitist. It is, but that is by design. That is what it was intended to be from the.
I agree.
So there has to be something excluded, and that means that there's going to be some really good strips out there that are done by some very talented and very dedicated hobbyists, but those folks have not made the decision, I'm going to become a professional. I'm going to devote the time. I'm going to devote the energy. I'm going to devote the resources. I'm going to devote the hours of my life slaving away at that drawing table to get the chance at being able to sell my work to people. And this is intended as a way to reward people who have done that.
Oh yeah, I understand that premise, and there is a place for that premise. I'm saying the problem that they have with the web is that it is very, very hard to make that separation.
Absolutely,
is the oatmeal professional, or is the maker of the oatmeal professional cartoonist, or is he a search engine optimizer that is optimizing for cartoons and other things?
However, we are seeing, I mean, through something like this, as well as some of the other steps, I mean, John becoming a member who his work is primarily web-based, we are seeing the NCS open up more to the alternative to the new media as well. I mean, so we do have to give them kudos for that. And I'm ecstatic seeing the new category.
I do give a lot of credit to Tom Richmond, because this has been one of the central tenets that he wants to make of his presidency of the NCS, is to open this up, is to find a way to be inclusive. as inclusive as is possible. And the question is trying to figure out who is a professional, because before it was really simple. Are you syndicated? No, then you're not a professional.
Right.
Now it's not. It is not. It is extremely difficult to do that, to make that kind of differentiation.
And
the NCS is also, you got to also realize the NCS kind of works on an honor system when it comes to the thing about how much of your living are you making from cartooning. They don't ask for W-2s. They don't ask to see your tax returns. They don't. They are. Again, this is a professional organization, so they're expecting you to be honest and act like a professional, and so they're not going and auditing people to say, oh well, you I'm sorry, you dropped to 49.95%. You're out. They don't do that. So the premise here, John, is
that the web by its nature is anathema to this professional hobbyist distinction. And we see this with bloggers. Who's a professional reporter? Well, bloggers report news, but are they professional? Who knows? And same with webcomics. Who's a professional webcomic creator or comic creator? We have no idea. It varies.
But also, the NCS has the right to define its own membership criteria and its own so they have set this as the standard. Is it right? Is it wrong? Who's to say? It's what the NCS has decided is going to be their criteria. And if you don't like it, then don't join the NCS.
Well, no.
However, they are opening the NCS, I should say.
Yeah,
let me wedge in here because I want to wrap this particular story up. I want to say that I do appreciate the NCS because they, as you said, Tom Richmond and his presidency is opening it up more. We are seeing non-syndicate in the new media, in the web-based stuff, being invited in more. They made John a member, so they'll let anybody in. Almost anybody. We know one person who probably won't ever get in, but...
You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised. He came to Boston, to the Rubens in Boston, and it was a very good experience for everybody.
Give him time.
Tom is probably never going to talk to me again after I admit this, but I offered to sponsor him into the NCS. I offered to write him a letter.
Yeah, and NCS is a great organization. My only thing is I think they're going to run into a problem with the fundamental premise of the NCS as this, you know, exclusive club in the way the web works, which is breaking down exclusivity.
However, that will remain to be seen. We're going to have to see what happens. I do appreciate the NCS for opening this up, for taking the broader view, even though they are still going for artists only and not us people who write. But on that note, let's go ahead and take a quick break. We've got people who need to pay us by our advertising. So for everybody, we'll see you after the break.
This is The Fump.
And all the elves say,
it's fun to fly with the bat guy.
Hello, I'm the Doctor. Just the Doctor, and this is my crew. How do you do? I'm just a madman with a box. Big blue box, foxy and sexy, if you only knew. Yes, it's bigger on the inside. Ask him.
Say, it was haunted by a ghost. The ghost of Billy Mays. He's always shouting. Hello, hello. Hello. You are the nice and orange glow. Yeah. Please everything now. Price is low. And if you call out,
get on your Tonica. It's Star Wars. You can hang out with Qui-Gonica. I'm a Millennium Falconica. With a Wookiee.
Corn, beef, and cabbage. Corn, beef, and cabbage.
Hot, hot, in the pot. Hot, hot, in the pot. Hot, hot.
That's the Funny Music Project at thefump.com. thefump.com.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to episode 50 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. I'm your host, Thomas Rivore, along with Alex Heberling from alexesguide.net and Eric Kimball from bladebunny.com, plus our guest host today, John Lotshaw from a bunch of stuff, including the Accidental Centaurs. So let's go ahead and go into the next one after the long discussion we had about the NCS Awards. There's this other small organization that's having some awards coming up very soon. It's time for the Hugos again, the Grandmaster, the big poobah of the Science Fiction Community Awards. And over on goblinscomic.com, there's from the creator, the writer of it, Funt, who is doing just a little bit of politicking, hoping to get nominated for the best graphic story, Hugo.
Now, let's just give it to Phil and be done with it.
Yeah, yeah. Girl Genius, move on.
It's Phil Folio, that's it.
Well, Girl Genius has stepped out of the running this year.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, they have.
Yeah, that's right.
Since they've won like for 3 years in a row, they decided that they would withdraw themselves from nomination so that the category doesn't just become the Girl Genius show year after year.
He's finally run out of mantle space, redundant. I guess.
He needs to build a new mantle. A steampunk mantle, of course.
But it is... definitely more towards the print side of things, but I mean, for us webcomics who do go into print, that's crossworlds.ws you want to nominate. Not that I'm pushing anything forward towards, but it is. The Hugos are the big thing. If you are just nominated for the Hugos, that's a huge kudos for that.
Yeah.
With Girl Genius out of the running, it will be very interesting to see who's nominated this year. Because absolutely, every year they have been giving webcomics a shot on that one.
And it seems like Phil was just been following him because Phil has won Hugo's and other awards before. So, I mean, it just seems, well, they saw his name. We know Phil's work from other stuff. Yeah, that's it. Not to say that Girl Genius is not deserving of it. It's most certainly deserving, but there's a lot of good stuff out there, as we're going to see from the other nominees this year. But also, we are seeing over the return of another webcomic from Akewood, created by Chris Onstad. He's got a big interview over on Comics Alliance about his return to his webcomic, which, as they say, is a series of quirky anthropomorphic characters based on stuffed animals. John.
Sounds like a furry convention to me.
But I mean, he went on hiatus back in March 2011, and is coming back to it now. It's not even a year, and they're making a big news story out of this. We're making a big news story out of this.
Yeah, I lost it on this one too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad to see a webcomic or a popular webcomic is coming back. But I mean, a hiatus, as much as I say, a hiatus of a year or more is not uncommon for a lot of webcomics. Yeah.
Well, Akewood has always been kind of a darling of the literary set in webcomics. Hark of Vagrant has kind of filled that spot since Akewood went away. So that's kind of the reason, I think, the reason why there's been some buzz about it is just because... it'd be like what would happen if Bill Warson announced that Calvin and Hobbes were coming back. Of course, not to the level that would happen if that ever happened. But I mean, it's kind of the same thing. It was always the darling of certain critics, and it will. So they're just all abuzz because it's coming back. Ooh, it's coming back. It's coming back.
All we need is for Kate Beechin to write it, and I think Eric's head would explode.
No, I would just be drowned.
Eric, you didn't see that article about Kate Beechin going to be writing it?
Oh, God, no.
Boom!
Writing Akewood? No one the face of the planet would not have seen that article. It would be on every website and every place imaginable. I like Kate Beaton. I like Chris Onsen. Tom teases me about this. I hate people who write about Kate Beaton and Chris Onsen. They drive me nuts. But Kate Beaton and Chris Onsen are great people. I have no problem with them. Just the literary set you're talking about, I want to throttle those people.
those who can't write criticism.
Actually, so, that leads into our next story, because those who can do, those who can't steal from other people. over on Randy Mulholland's Tumblr account, choochoobear.tumblr.com, he has a story relayed to him by Funt from Goblins. There is a guy out there, and this has been a problem for a while now for us people in webcomics, but there's a guy out there specifically whose name is... I'm looking for it. Well, it's around here somewhere, and I'll come up with it. But what he's doing...
While you're coming up with it, I just want to add one thing. This was given to us by Jay Strasberg on Twitter, who has been helping us out with a lot of the articles. So I want to give him credit.
Give a shout-out to him. The person's name is Lance Drish. What is happening is he has written an app for Facebook that is what's known as scraping. They are stealing the content of webcomics out there. Yeah, that's bad enough.
Bill Holbrook actually sent me a link about this because he found about it independently, because Kevin and Kel is one of the strips that's being scraped.
Yeah, there's about 160 comics out there that are happening for this. And it's bad enough because when you scrape the comic from our sites, you're pulling away the ads, you're pulling out the sources of revenue, the ask for donations, whatever that helps us create this comic and get the feedback and everything else. But even worse, this guy is asking for donations. So he's not just eliminating our source of revenue, he's stealing it.
And he's asking for donations under the guise of the names of the original comics. It's not just help keep this app alive, it's help keep the questionable content app alive, or the something positive app. It changes depending on what comic you're doing, but it misrepresents it to imply that the money actually goes to the creators when none of it does.
Yeah,
exactly. We've seen stuff like this before, but I mean, this is one of the things that are just really over the top. You know, I joke about it. Webcomics are, for the most part, are not a huge moneymaker or even a medium moneymaker. We get enough to scrape by in most cases. But this is, I mean, it's literally taking food out of our mouths.
Yeah, we got enough scraping going on in webcomics. We don't need scrapers. So according to Randy here, apparently it has been pulled from Facebook. I'm looking at his Tumblr blog right now. It says this went up yesterday. Looks like it's been yanked from Facebook. He filed a DMCA takedown request, but Facebook responded saying the link was no longer valid. And when Randy checked, it was gone. So apparently it has been pulled. But this keeps happening. This has been going on for, it used to be it was just on the web. And every now and then you get one cropping up where somebody's trying to be kind of some kind of an aggregator or something. The best thing to do is if you're gonna like a webcomic, go to the webcomic site. Most webcomic artists provide additional content on there that you're not going to get from the scraper, in an attempt to get you to come to the site. And they need you. We need you to come to the sites, because that's how we. That's one of the ways we make money, is because there's going to be Google or Project Wonderful ads, and we need you to click on those too.
Right. And if you see
turn
something,
off your ad blocker. Comic, turn off your ad blocker. Give the comic. You can bear to look at the ad and give the comic a few pennies for your visit. Then just turn it off.
Well, more than a few pennies. Micropayments never work.
It's a few pennies out of somebody else's pocket too.
Right. To me, that's the big thing. I mean, I've seen sites out there that have created collection. You know, they were doing scraping just to make it easier for people to see, and they had a link back to the original site. That still takes away from some of our revenue, but at least they were still referring to us. If you see somebody out there advertising for something for a webcomic and it does not have the creator's name and authorization, if you do not see something on the original site itself, more than likely it is a ripoff, it is a scam, and it is stealing our money.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know I speak for all of us here, because we're all webcomic creators.
Well, some of us writers.
Yeah, some of us are
creators. We are creators.
Some of us are those lowly writers who really don't matter when you get it. I mean, anyone can write words, right, Tom? That's easy.
No love for the writer. But yeah, if you don't support us, help us out. And I mean, if you see stuff like this, please don't hesitate to tell us. I mean, it's not like you're the brown shirts informing on your neighbor. This is someone who is, as I said, taking money out of our mouths. We cannot afford it.
And it's not only happening just on Facebook. Keep an eye out on the web stores, on the web like the app stores, like iTunes, Apple's App Store, and iTunes, and Android web, because you'll see apps out there that are
scraping.
Be questionable.
Yeah,
that are scraping. And if you're ever in doubt about an app, go to the original site. And because and see if the creator has an official device application for the site. Some do. Like I know Kevin and Kel has. There's an official iPhone app for Kevin and Kel.
Not that you're plugging one of your sites.
I'm gonna plug you one of. Well, I don't get a penny from that, so I'll just go ahead and do it for free. But just use that as an example. That's a legitimate, real, honest, Bill Holbrook endorsed and authorized application.
But they say,
I don't know if there are any others out there, but that's the only one that puts money in Bill's pocket.
But let's actually go on to, because this leads into our next story as well, because there's a practice out there of remixing or moshing or whatever you want to call it, where you take the content from somebody's comic, you take out the words and put your own words in there. Writer Greg Pak, who is the writer for World War Hulk and the Astonishing X-Men, has actually put a comic out there exactly for you to do that, where you can take it, scan it, and put your own words in there. It's been released as a free PDF and as a Comixology title, so you can put it on your iPhone and your Android, and released underneath the Creative Commons license. The title is Vision Machine, and he's given permission for people to remix it and do what you want with it.
As long as it's non-commercial.
As long as it's non-commercial. And I think this is a great idea. I mean, we've been seeing remixes or whatever the current term is for it for so many different webcomics and print comics. It's nice to see somebody doing something like this, just putting something out in the common domain for people to use.
I think it's a great idea. It definitely is going to get him a little publicity because nobody else has done one specifically for that. And you're right, there has been a long tradition of doing that on the web. For example, the Dysfunctional Family Circus, until it kind of got out of hand and actually had the test and approval of the late Bill Keane.
Yeah,
it was funny, or
something. On the other hand, I mean, which turned out the same way, and that was Garfield minus Garfield.
Yes, exactly.
Which was basically taking out the text of Garfield and changing it from a humorous comic to an extremely sad result.
Yeah, and but just by taking Garfield out, it became about this sad, lonely guy who talks to himself. And that sounds real.
Jim Davis actually went through and published Garfield minus Garfield under the Paws titles.
Yes. And as I said, with the Dysfunctional Family Circus, when that was going, Bill Keane was very supportive of it until it got out of hand and started really crossing the line. And then in order to protect the Family Circus trademarks, they had to shut it down. But for a while, he was happy with it. And, you know, believe it or not, Bill Keane was actually known for having a sense of humor, not that you'd know it from his comic strip, but he was known for having a very well-refined sense of humor. And he
the interesting thing about this is, and the difference between those, we're talking about comic strips on all those others. This is a long-form comic. And would it work as well with a long-form remixing work as well? Because usually these remixes are very small, short bits. They're not narrative. Nope.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting experiment to see what people come up with. But I think it's a great idea, and it's a novel concept to do this, to open that up and allow that to be done. I would be very interested to see what happens. I do notice that this is not done under one of the major comic book companies, because they would never do that. Even letting a second or third list title go out for something like that, there's no way they would do that. But you know, I'm happy to see see what happens.
Next up on our list, a story that I had to add in here, just because I told you so. That is that we are seeing six titles of the New 52 from DC canceled. Now, they're into, 4 months into the New 52, which means that these things had to have really been bad for them to be canceled really before good sales figures were coming in on this. What has been canceled is Blackhawks, Hawk and Dove, Men of War, Mr. Terrific, Static Shock, and the one written by co-publisher Dan DiDio, OMAC. Now, they do have six issues coming in to replace these, and you know we're going to be hearing this has been our plan all along type of stuff. But yeah, we're beginning to see the first casualties of the New 52. For those of us old enough to remember, I honestly see the DC implosion part 2.
Yeah, I was going to say DC implosion 2.
Did they cancel all the titles of my narrative characters there? Static Shock and Mr. Terrific?
Yeah, that looks like it. I can't think of anything other than that.
Huh.
But, and speaking on a similar note, as mentioned, one of the ones canceled is Hawk and Dove, which was drawn by fan favorite Rob Liefeld. But don't worry, folks, out there, because Rob Liefeld is going to be taking over the art on 3 DC titles in May. He'll be doing the artwork, and I use the term loosely, on Deathstroke, The Savage Hawkman, and Grifter, which he will also plot for Savage Hawkman and Grifter. Will co-plot.
Well, happy day, praise the Lord.
Say goodbye to seeing feet in those comic books.
Okay, I'm fine as long as they don't give him a driver's license, because there was this video of him inking his comic while driving on the road.
Well, that actually does explain a lot.
While he films himself with his phone.
Oh,
God. On the steering wheel. I'll drive.
Well, I mean, was he driving or was he inking with his feet?
He was driving and inking and recording himself. Yeah.
I figured he was probably using his feet to drive, because if he used his feet to ink, it would be an improvement. And there went my chance to ever be published by Image Comics. But onto something that actually appears to be pretty good, we're seeing that Aaron Diaz's gorgeous, and it's the story's term gorgeous, transhumanist webcomic Dresden Kodak is in the middle of a arc called Dark Science, but what's really entertaining is that they're actually adding music to it. There's a soundtrack being added to a webcomic, which again is something, it'll be awfully hard for him to print this stuff now.
Dresden Kodak it wasn't official. This was one of the fans who did it, which just shows Dresden Kodak has the best fans ever. I wish I had his fans. But it is really professionally sounding music added to this video. It's something to hear.
Oh, boy. But I mean, it's good to see. I mean, if it is professional or author allowed or not, it does show that some of the creativity out there. Yeah. Next up is over on a Blogspot. EddieCampbell.blogspot.com has a very interesting interview with Jeff Smith of Bone fame, where he's talking about a lot of the problems in self-publishing. I mean, we get into the business of doing webcomics into publishing here on the newscast every once in a while, and this has actually got some good insight into some of the trouble that you have with self-publishing, with self-merchandising, as opposed to being from the syndicate or the major companies. I can't stress enough, taking a look at this story and taking a look at this interview and seeing what's happening over there.
It's a very useful story. It really will help me out.
Over for fans of Pearls Before Swine, they have just released, boy, we're getting back into this section of it again, their own new app for Pearls Before Swine. Taking a look at it, it's going to be an iPad app, which is, of course, going to go through and have the larger screen. We're seeing a lot of both self-published as well as the major companies going out with more and more apps, aren't we?
Yeah, there's it's getting easier and easier to do. In fact, Moonbase is looking at being able to launch something similar within the next few months, because there are software toolkits that are out there that are very reasonable in terms of the price, that allow to the creation of very professional apps for iOS and for Android. It's just, you know, a matter of getting the content in and then compiling it. So you're going to see a lot more of this as we move along, because really this is where the portable devices, that is where entertainment is moving. Not just comics, but all aspects of entertainment is moving very heavily to these devices. So you're going to see this more and more. I just get this picture of Stefan Passes sitting at a terminal typing code in, and then my head explodes. Stefan's been very good about when it comes to finding and exploiting the markets for his strip. And so this doesn't surprise me at all. And I think it'll probably be a big success for him.
I think it will as well. We're also taking a look over from Boom Gen Studios. Cognito Comics has announced their partnership with Boom Gen Studios to where CIA Operation Ajax is going to be an animated feature film. We talk about spreading out into other media. We've seen stories from Keen Spot and from other companies where webcomics are taking over and becoming movies or TV shows or whatever. And I think it's great.
Yeah, CIA Operation Ajax is also a very interesting comic to look at, because it's one that uses the web format to its full extent. It is not just a comic. It has sound. It is interactive. It has extra information in it that you can go and look at. If you look at the video that was included on the link, you'll see it's not just a comic. It's an actual experience. So it shows a lot of things you can do with a digital format that you just couldn't do in regular comics before.
We've talked before about Scott McCloud and his Infinite Canvas, and yet even that looks at, you know, just going different, the X and Y axis, yeah, and not taking webcomics to their full potential. There are some out there. I referred to over at City of Reality by Ian Sampson, where he has done a lot with using the tools that are for the web to make a webcomic more than just an electronic version of a print.
Yeah, but I mean, if you call I think X and Y axis is a very good term here, because the comics you see that really are using the digital medium well, they go in the Z axis. They give you depth to the comic. So if you're reading a comic and you want to see on Ajax and you want to see the dossier of the person you're reading about, you can go into that, and then you can go deeper into the actual information at any point within the comic. So it provides depth to the page.
And finally, over on forbiddenplanet.co.uk, there is an article there talking about how women are being portrayed in comics by Alan Moore, the writer of Watchmen and so many other groundbreaking comics. And it's interesting because this was an article written back in 1983. And how far women portrayals have come as opposed to how far they haven't come. Alex, I mean, since you're our resident female, what do you think about how comics have come as speculated or as written by Moore here?
He didn't know there was going to be a task.
Well, yeah.
No, I will... Playing the role of Alex here, or at least while Alex looks at this, I mean, one of the things... The interesting thing was how little had changed. I mean, it talked about the same thing that we were talking about with Starfire in the most recent DC comic, you know, and it was the same character and the same problems.
But you see, I mean, I actually see that it's actually worse. We talked about the Starfire. That was just pure gratuity. It didn't serve anything for the story. It didn't serve anything except titillation. But let's go back to Alex. I mean, Alex, I hope you're there again.
Sorry, I had muted myself to cough.
Yeah, I figured you saw the title from Moore's story entitled Invisible Girls and Phantom Ladies and decided to take that to heart.
Alex, use your power of muting yourself on this message
that the media is giving me. Unfortunately, I did not have time to read this before we started recording, so I'm not going to be very helpful.
So I'm looking at some of the highlights from this thing. There's a paragraph in here where it says where he's talking about women as decoration, yeah. And to quote Moore, nearly every female character in comics, with the possible exceptions of Iron Man's Mrs. Arbogast and Superboy's Ma Kent, and again this is from the '80s, has been designed to exploit her pinup potential to the full. They all have long, willowy legs, trim waists, and torsos that look as if they've had a pair of anti-tank rockets fired through their backs.
Oh, so he was talking about Rob Liefeld and the way he draws women.
I would say yes, except that was 10 years before Liefeld and Image.
And this was long before the girlfriend in the refrigerator, too. So it has gotten worse.
Well, it hasn't gotten worse. It's stayed the same.
Well, yeah. I mean, it hasn't gotten better. Let me put it that way.
No, because a very... good example that we've had recently is over at DC Comics, and that is the character of Amanda Waller. And to me, it's a perfect highlight of what's going on. Mm-hmm. Amanda Waller, for those who remember, was in the Suicide Squad and a number of other ones. She was a heavyset black woman, a very strong personality. Yeah, I mean, sometimes being obnoxious.
Her nickname was The Wall.
Exactly.
Which is very apt.
Yes. Because of both size and personality. Stewart is all get out. I mean, and you didn't cross her. I mean, she stood up face to face with such characters as Superman and Batman without flinching. Yeah, and Lex Luthor. And I mean, like I said, short, heavy set, older woman, older black woman. Now, since the new 52, she's become Angela a pimp model.
Yeah, exactly.
Angela Bassett in the Green Lantern movie. She's become thin, willowy, well-built, young. The standard cliche. I mean, she's still black at least, but we're seeing to where females in comics are just becoming pinup dolls again.
Yeah, and that's sort of the narrowing.
It really never changed.
Well, I won't say that because we had been seeing, and I will say that, again, this is on a very rare note, but Gail Simone writing Batgirl, or when she was writing Power Girl, I mean, we have seen strong female characters without being the cliche.
Those have been the exceptions.
Exactly, the exceptions that really prove the rule.
It's still very much a fanboy sort of thing, and it's even worse now than it was before. It hasn't really improved. I'm just as guilty as anybody else with Sam in my strip. It's deplorable, it's reprehensible, it's inexcusable, but it's what sells. And until the comics industry, and it's a catch-22, the comics industry isn't going to change that until they are able to get comics out that appeal to audiences that aren't going to stand for that.
Except again, we
not,
saw
not going to come out with comics that, that appeal to that until they. Yeah, it's a catch 22.
Yeah, we are seeing a regression back to worse than what we had in the 80s because we did see a number of strong comics out there, strong women comics that were doing good sales, not great but good. They were fan favorites across gender and ages, and yet, thanks to the New 52. They have been banished to non-existence.
Well, no, they haven't been banished. I mean, they have migrated to the web. I mean, if you take a look at web comics, it's a pretty even distribution of both female and male creators and both female-oriented stories and male-oriented stories and then stories in between.
Yeah, I did hear something about this one person called Kate Beechin writing web comics. I mean, I could see more women over there.
Yeah, but I mean, what's happened is that we have now, the web is where these places, where these people have fled, and you see this drain of talent from the publishers.
Yeah. You're right. You know, here in Atlanta, we have two right off the top of my head, two very, very talented women comics creators who are exclusively web only, with Gina Biggs and Jenny Breeden. And the both of them are doing very, very well with their comics. In fact, Gina has actually even started up a side business of doing adult comics for women, by women, for women, and that has been phenomenally successful for them. So you're right, that's where they're going. And they're abandoning the traditionals because the traditionals are abandoning them.
Absolutely. But let's go ahead, and I want to thank everybody for joining in. Let me go ahead and start off by thanking our guest host, John Lotshaw from Accidental Centaurs, Bill Holbrook's Kevin and Kel, Moonbase Press, so many other things that he's done. So thank you for joining in, John.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Also, from alexisguy.net, our own Alex Heberling.
Yay for fat girls in my comic.
And
one of them.
Someone whose webcomics have proven the rule about pinup girls in comics, Eric Kimball from BladeBunny.com.
Thank you, Tom.
And make sure to visit us over at newscast.webcastbeacon.com, where you can see some of the stories that didn't make it onto the show, such as Girl Wonder looking for board of director members, or the battle over online identity, Alan Morrigan meeting the Occupy Wall Street crowd over their V for Vendetta masks, and many other things. And that's over at newscast.webcastbeacon.com. And to round this off, I'm Thomas Rabor from 910 Comics, 910cmx.com. Thank you for joining in. See you next week, and we'll see you in the funny papers.
Was that URL correct?
Nope.
It's newscast.webcomicbeacon.com.
I could just re-record that part of it.
Yeah, but then we won't point out that you're wrong.
Exactly.